Okay, good morning. We're up to Divrei Hayamim, Aleph, Perek Hey, Pasuk Zayin. Pasuk Zayin. Yesterday we learned about the Yichus of Ruvain, the first Yipsukim. And after learning about Ruvain, the basic introduction and a few of his family members, learned about the last one, the most distinguished of them all, was Be'era, the No. Be'er, we learned yesterday, was the father of Hoshea, about his Nevuah. And this Pasuk Zayin that we're up to tells us, don't be misled and think that the only one that was distinguished among the tribe of Reuben was Be'era. There are many other distinguished individuals, and they are not going to be listed here in Divrei Hayamim. That's a very big mystery why he lists only some, does not list others. But he says here, Be'echav l'mishpechosav, and his brethren, his brothers. Who, brothers of who? There are different opinions in the Mefarshim. If you look in the Mefarshim, and I'm not sure, the Gra and the Malbim, it can mean either a reference to Be'era. Be'era had brothers, or Echav can refer all the way back to the beginning, Carmi. We only listed Yoel. Yoel was the son of Carmi. So Carmi had other brothers, other children, brothers of Yoel, which also had a very distinguished family line. Or it could mean the brothers of Carmi. We have here four brothers, Chanoch, Faluch, Chetzer, and Vicharmi. We then begin to list the children of Carmi, his descendants, starting with the Yoel. But what about Charmi's brothers? He had a brother called Chetzer, a brother called Faluch, a brother called Chanoch. What about them? What's their Yichas? So that Ezra, who compiled Divrei Hayom, tells us, I'm not going to tell you, that's a secret. If you want to know who they are, you got to go look in another sefer called Divrei Hayomim, Lamalchei Yisrael. That sefer is referred to very often in Malachim. In the sefer Malachim there are stories, and then it says, and if you want to know the other details, go look in the Chronicles of the Kings. And that has been, that's not a holy book. It's out of print. Very good. It's out of print.
So are the kings.
It's not a holy book. It's not even part of the Sifri Chitzayim, the Apocrypha. You know, it's very interesting. What? Yeah. So the Apocrypha, the Sifri Chitzayim, to be in the Sifri Chitzayim, you have to be on a very high madriga. Those were candidates. They were considered. Maybe these also should be part of the Sifri Tanakh. They were written on Ruach HaKodesh. They had very, very high standards. But it was decided, for whatever reason, they're not going to be included in the canon, in the Chof Dalet Sifrei Tanakh. But it's a madrega. It's a very big madrega to at least be part of the Apocrypha, the Sifrei Chitzayim. Chanukah, for example, Sefer HaMakabim. Not Yehudis. You see, that's what I want to point out. There are a number of books that are written recording what happened at the time of the Yevanim. There's Sefer HaMakabim, then the Sefer Yehudis, and the Sefer Megillas Antiochus. So Megillas Antiochus and the Yehudis, if I'm not mistaken, are not on the level of Sefer HaMakabim. Pseudo-apocrypha? Okay, I never heard that term before. Okay, it could be, but it's not. The only one that was really the Apocrypha that was a candidate for the Tanakh was Sefer HaMakabim. Now, Sefer HaMakabim we don't have today. What we have today is a translation of the Greek version. It was originally written in Hebrew by, the tradition is, it's brought down in a different psalm, I don't remember the psalm where it says all this stuff, but by Ziknei Shammai v'Hillel. The elders of the house of Shammai and Hillel, they were the ones who wrote, it's called Megillas Beis Chashmonoi. Sefer HaMakabim is really called Megillas Beis Chashmonoi, and it was written in Hebrew with Ruach HaKodesh. It was meant to be, it was a candidate for Tanakh, but it was rejected for whatever reason, and it was then translated into Greek, and the original version of Hebrew was lost. We don't have it. No one, if they would find that today, it would be in some, who knows, some cave somewhere, it would be priceless. Couldn't put a value on
that
it.
That same situation happened with Ben-Sira. Ben-Sira
is also a translation. Right.
And it was only available in Greek. Solomon Schechter was shown a piece of parchment, whatever it was, and he recognized it as Hebrew.
As Hebrew. Ben Sira. But was it the original Hebrew, or was it a translation of the Greek?
No, it was from...
The original?
That's how he found the Geniza, and
yeah.
The Geniza, because of...
Cairo Geniza.
Seeing Ben Sira.
But we have to know because like Sefer HaMakabim that we have today, which is very ancient, it's a Hebrew translation of the Greek version. But that goes back, way, way back, and the original Hebrew is lost, so we don't even have the original Hebrew with the Mechonesh. Okay, but I don't know, but Ben Sira, Sefer HaChitza, I don't know if Ben Sira is not part of the, is a part of the Apocrypha, Ben Sira? I don't think so. I don't even think it's any part of the Apocrypha. Okay, but over here, but the point I want to make is over here. This is really what he's saying. This is the Rashi. This is what Rashi says, and this is what the Suda says. And this pasuk ties in very important this concept in the pasuk Zayin. The echav lemishpechosav. So there are a few issues. Number one, who brother of who? His brethren. It either can refer to going back to Reuven's children. We only have learned in Pasuk Dalet Hey Vav, the children, the descendants of the fourth child, Charmi. So Echav here would refer to Chanoch, Falu, and Chetzron. Or, when it says Echav, it's referring to the other extreme, the brother of Be'eri. Or others learn it's the brother of Yoel, somewhere in the middle. But whatever it means other branches of the family, which we're not clear which branches of the family we are referring to from Shevet Reuven, lemishpechosav, according to their families. Families obviously branched out in many, many ways. Behis yachis, they are their lineage is traced. Their genealogy, lisolidosam, according to their generations. Haroish, the only ones that you have to know about is the head is Yi'el and Uzichariyahu. In other words, now I'll read Rashi in a moment to explain what this means, but the idea is that in ancient times, it's even true today, many people will tell you, oh, they have a Yichus brief. You have a Kohen Rappaport. There are Kohanim Miyuchasim. So they have a brief, they have some type of document where they trace their Yichus to who? They trace it back to Aaron HaKohen? No. They don't have a document. They trace it back a couple of generations, 10, 15, 20, 30, to a person who was accepted as a given, a Kohen Miyuchas. Now, what is the Yichus of that person? Let's say you go back 15 generations. Well, okay, very good. You're able to show them that you come from this, 15 generations back to this person. And that person, how do you know that he is a Kohen Miyuchas? How do you know that he comes direct from Aaron HaKohen? You'll go back another 30 generations. I don't know. That's been lost from the world. But it's accepted as a given that if you go back 15 generations to this person, we have a tradition as a Kohen Miyuchas. And we don't have the need to trace that person back further. That's been lost, whatever it is. Same exact thing over here. There were two people here called Yiel and Zechariah. Yiel and Zechariah were accepted to be the top of the line. These were descendants of Shevet Reuven. They had the best yichus. They were well known, well established. All of the people that are listed and not in this book in Divrei Hayamim, the Malchei Yisrael, there's a long list of people. Maybe who knows? Maybe there are 100 people. All of them had briefs, documents tracing the yichus back to these two people. And once you got to these two people, there was no longer a need to go further because these two people. It was a given, it was accepted that these people are miyuchasim to the tribe of Reuven and everything flows from there. So that's what it means over here in this Pasuk Zayin, we're dealing with over here, if you, the echa of different people, different branch of the family, mishuchasim will be siachis, l'soldosim, hadosh, the most distinguished was Yiel and Zechariah, you find them, and then you're okay. Let's see Rashi and the Mitzvahs to explain this in detail. Let's see the Mitzvahs first. Pasuk Zayin, the echa of miyudov. Yudav means those that were well known, famous people, celebrities. Vachavera, for their friends, Shel Be'era. The Mitsudos is translating the word Echav in reference to the last Pasuk. The last Pasuk was Pasuk Vav, Be'era Vino. Be'era, so we're only focusing then on the lineage of Charmi. We're not even going to discuss whatsoever Chanoch, Falu, Chetzron, only Charmi, going all the way down to Be'era. Be'era had brothers. Who are the brothers? Go look them up, and they're found. Next words of the Mitzvot L'mishpachosav, Ratzal Amar, Kol Echad L'mishpachos, L'mishpachos, B'hisyach Sam, l'seder toledosam hayanira. It would appear asher yiel hoya haroish mikulam uzecharya acharav. The most distinguished member of that family was Yiel, and then came Zecharya. Alki avoisehem hayu, because they were the great great grandparents. They were the top of the line. The top hayu anshe hamayla yoiser me avos kulam. They were the most distinguished, so therefore all the brothers of Be'eri, there were many, many children, they're all listed elsewhere, and they were all able to trace themselves to these families, the most distinguished families, Yiel and Zecharya. Look at Rashi. Different, no, different, L'chor not. There are two Zecharyas. There's Zecharya, the Kohen that was killed, whose blood bubbled for 250 years, he was Zecharya ben Yehoyada. And then there was a Zecharya that lived, in Navi, the Zechariah, another Navi that lived at the time of the Chormayis, much, much later, 200 years later. That's the Chayim Berechia. So the Navu of Zechariah, Od Yeshu, Zekenim, Zekenois, Rechavos, Yerushalayim, that's what you say in the Kina, in the Kina, that we're waiting for the prophecy of Zechariah. That Zechariah is not the Zechariah of Zechariah ben Yehoyad, who lived 250 years before and was murdered in the Beis HaMikdash by Yoyosh and his followers, because he was telling them that if you continue doing Avodah Zarah, there's going to be a Churban. So there are two prominent Zecharyas in the time of the Nevi'im, but I do not think that the Zechariyahu here is any of is either of those two. It's not likely. Maybe it is, but I don't think so.
What years were they?
So it's not clear. Be'erah. The era was at the time was 150 years before the Churban Beis HaMikdash, because Be'era was the father of Hoshea, and he was exiled with the Aseres HaShvatim. The Aseres HaShvatim took place in the time of Chizkiyahu, which was about approximately 150 years before the Churban Beis HaMikdash.
3182? Yeah, that's the dating.
Okay, the Hebrew dating. And then when you want to go deal with the secular dates, so that's about 150 to 200 BC, about 200 BCE, right? Before the Common Era, 200 years, 60 37, 60 is zero. Okay.
The Churban was 300 BC.
You're right. I made a mistake. It's much more. So it has to be more like 500 almost.
Yeah, right.
More like 500 years.
586.
More even five. Because the Churban took place in the year 70. So
that's the second.
So go backwards 420 years, and then plus another 70 years, plus another 100.
The 70 years is 3338 to 3408. That's the 70 years. That's so before that is going back.
So about 500 BCE, right? 500 BCE, something like that, is when this event took place. There are not many records of events in the secular world of things that happened during those years. Very, very schwach, very scant, very sketchy to know. They didn't even keep records. Time was very vague to them. Okay, now let's go further. So let's see the Rashi. Rashi pasuk Zion. Rashi says a lot similar. Behisyaches lesol ledosam harosh yiel uzechariyahu pisroim. Okay, one of the favorite words, Divrei Hayamim. The interpretation for this pasuk is as follows: Harei lo yachasti loch min Ruvein kim ktsat. Ezra is speaking. Rashi is speaking in the form of Ezra. He's personifying Ezra. I only have traced the lineage of a few, just a skeleton of Shevet Ruvain. The Ikur Yichuso. If you want to know the whole lineage of Ruvain, B'makom Yichuso. Find him in the book of Yichus. Where? Al Divrei Hayomim Lemalche Yisrael. Out of print. That's where you'll find, like you said, that Rabbi Mayevsky, that's where you found it, out of print. That's where you'll find the Yichus of Ruvain. Hoya, you'll find, the store next door. Bigel Eisen has all the new stuff. The store next door to Bigel Eisen, they have the old stuff. There's another store, they're very expensive, they're fortune. It's a collector's items. Hoya, Yiel Zecharia Horoish. Yiel and Zechariah were the leaders. Sha'al Yodan Kola Yichusun. Kola means backwards. It's a very misleading term. Kala means it comes to an end. So you think you're going down into the 21st century. Oh, here's where it came to an end. Kala means going upwards. You keep on going higher, 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 higher. Oh, you got to Yi'il? You're finished. You don't have to go further. Because Yi'il was such a legend, was such a major figure. Everyone knew how Yi'il and Zechariah can trace themselves back all the way to Reuven, to Yaakov Avinu, and therefore the whole family went kala. That's how I saw this. The term explained somewhere. I don't know where I saw this to explain. What does Rashi mean here? Kala Yichusan. We're going up. We're going up until we reach this distinguished figure, and there's no need to go further once we come here. Okay, next. Let's now go to Pasuk Ches. Now, after we've mentioned that you should be aware there are other distinguished people, and we're not going to discuss them. Now, let me tell you, I want to, Ezra says, I do want to list certain families and tell you exactly where they lived. Now we have to remember, Reuven lived on the east side of the Yarden. This
only
goes
half.
What? No, half of Menashe. Reuven, God, Reuven, the Chatzis Shevet Menashe. And it's interesting, Chatzis Shevet, I didn't know this very recently, Chatzis Shevet does not mean Mamash Shevet, it means two of eight families, a fourth. Because Menashe was broken up into eight families, and only two of the families lived on the east side, which means whenever you have the concept called chatzi, it does not mean it means part. For example, it's not the word chatzi, it's a little different word. Niksa shvachoi befanav. So people make a mistake and think you say half of a person's praise, right? And the person is present, niksa shvacha, will only say half. That's not what it means. It means a mashu will just reveal a little facet, just a little teeny detail. But there's infinite amount more to reveal about the person. Miksas and chatzi does not necessarily mean half. That miksas, that's not such a kasha. Chatzi means half, but even when it comes to chatzi shevet Menashe, it means only part. In this case, a fourth. Two eighths, because there were eight families, two families fell on the east side of the island. I'll just tell you something now that has nothing to do with anything. Okay, just an interesting thing. I'll tell you what. Chatzi. I met someone recently. My father, my grandfather was a Rosh Hashiva in RJJ, Shmuel David Warshavchik. He was a very distinguished Rosh Hashiva, and he had a lot of Talmidim. So I was speaking recently to one of his Talmidim, which is now, he's probably has to be in his 60s, at least for sure. Maybe he's even 70, whatever he is. So he said to me that something was bothering him for over 40 years. What was bothering him? When he was a young bachar, talking to my grandfather, he said something to my grandfather that was very good, very, very brilliant, the chiddush. And my grandfather, he stopped, and he said, "Wow, your mamish a chatzi iloy, a chatzi iloy." He said in Yiddish, chutzi, the way he says chutzi, that's in Yiddish, a chutzi iloy, a chutzi iloy. And he was, at that point in time, this person was a young boy, could be even a high school boy, or right post. He was afraid of his Rosh Hashiva. He was afraid, like, you count your words when you speak to someone very distinguished. So, a chotzi. So it always bothered him. Why did my grandfather call him a chotzi, not a complete? He says, I'm a balgai. I want to be a holy loy. Why only a chotzi iloy? It always bothered him. 40 years later, he was reading. A biography about Rav Baruch Ber Leibowitz. Rav Baruch Ber, the famous Rav Baruch Ber, the Birch HaShmuel. And there he found in a footnote, he even told me the page, this idea of a chotzi iloy, that you don't call a person. And if you call a person an Iluy, it's an insult.
He hit the top.
Because 99% of the Iluyim are Meshugoyim. It's true. We know that. It's a mitzvah. It's 99.9% of people who are groisa Iluyim. They never get married. They do crazy things. They walk in the street. They don't dress normally. We know that. The Meshugoyim. They don't take haircuts. So if you want to give someone a compliment, you call them a Chotzi Iluy. A chotzi iloy means you have the mind of an Einstein, but you're normal. You're a normal guy. You're with it. You know, you dress normally, you do everything like a normal person, so it's the ultimate compliment. So he told me it took him 40 years to learn, to understand that Chotzi Iloi is a compliment, not an insult. So Chotzi Sheve Menashe, Chotzi Menashe. It was a compliment to Menashe, it wasn't an insult to Menashe. Yeah.
I think a corollary in Yiddish that you say to someone, it's a shtickle
tzaddik.
A
shtickle tzaddik. Okay, because he's saying a complete tzaddik is a meshugana, right? A meshugana. Interesting idea. A shtickle tzaddik. If you say too much of anything is no good. Everything has to be done in moderation. He also was joking to me that he told me that someone else also once said it to him. Someone also once called him at some point also a chotzi iloi. So he said, oh, the two halves, chazel litzarufe, chazel litzarufe, they can combine, now I can be... Okay, this guy's a real character, you should see this guy. Okay, this is a character that's best. But, okay, let's go further. Now that we got that out of the way, we can go proceed. Now we have a list of people, and we have to remember that Reuven, God, Chatz, Yishev, Menashe lived on the east side of the Yarden. And Parshas Matos, Moshe Rabbein was very disturbed. Why are you trying to take this? That's not part of the main part of Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael was on the west side of the Yarden. What are you trying to take this land? So they said, well, we have a lot of mikneh, a lot of animals. The land is fertile. It's exactly what we need. We want to dwell here. It's fine. And Moshe Rabbeinu, what's going to do with your brethren? Who's going to fight? How are they going to fight and conquer the land? 7 years of kibush. So they said, do not worry. We will settle our children and wives here. And we will cross the Yarden and we will fight. And interestingly, the Chazal say that they did double, more than there was asked of them. Moshe only asked of them that they fight for 7 years. We know that it took 7 years to conquer and 7 years to divide. Now, it's not clear what it means, why did it take 7 years to divide? Once you've conquered the land, you can divide it in 5 minutes. Make a girl. 1, 2, 3, it's over. So that's a discussion in and of itself. Why it took 7 years to divide, right? If you conquer the land, it's your land, let's divide it up. Sit down around the table, we'll have a map, and we'll cut it up. You don't need 7 years to divide the land. Obviously, there's more to it. Dividing the land is this. It also appears to involve war. Whatever it is. But they were only asked to go with their brothers for 7 years, for the 7 years of conquest. It was not asked of them to go and remain there during the 7 years of division. Chazal say that Reuven, God, Chatz, Yishev, Menashe doubled their pledge. They stayed an additional 7 years until the land was divided. Only then did they go back to the east side of the Yarden, back to their families. And it's very important. We're going to come now to a whole section of it. I hope we won't do today, one at a time. And they came back, they did not even recognize their own children because they have not seen their children in 14 years. And a lot can happen in 14 years. And in fact, as I'll say, that things were not too good. Their children, because no one was giving them a proper chinuch, okay, this is a real good topic, a juicy topic for chinuch habanim. They know the parents, the fathers, were not there giving them, guarding them properly. They were left with their mothers and just to roam out in the streets. They were under the influence of the non-Jewish neighbors in those foreign lands. And the children, the parents did not recognize their children. That doesn't just mean they did not recognize them. You can't tell if this is my son or my neighbor's son. I don't even know if you're Jewish. Because the way you dress and the way you're here, they focus specifically on their hair, they grew very long hair like the non-Jewish neighbors. One thing, when you come into a Bnei Brak, this is a Jewish child, right? And they have the long pace, and they're wearing big yarmulkes, and their heads are shaven. And you know you're dealing with Jewish children. You may not know if it's your child or someone else's child. They haven't been here in 30 years, 14 years. I'm not sure exactly who's who. But I know everyone here is Jewish. I know I'm in Haredi territory, right? That's not a problem. When they came back to the east of the Yarden, they did not even know if they're Jewish, because they were all intermingled. And to make matters worse, we'll probably learn today in a few moments, there was a war going on. There was a major war going on between two different groups, and And when the people of Reuben, Gad, and Bechatzi, Shev, Nasher came back, they were all confused. Wait a minute. Who's who? Who's fighting who? Who's Jewish? Who's not Jewish? What's going on? And then suddenly, when the battle got really, really bad, they heard one side call out, Anenu, Hashem, save us in the merit of Avraham, Yitzchak, v'Yaakov. And when the parents heard one side, one group, one camp calling out in the name of Hashem, Avraham, Yitzchak, v'Yaakov, they right away realized, recognized, these are our children. And they joined them, and they helped them, and they won the battle. And we'll see exactly about the battles. These are things only recorded in Dibrahiyam. It's not recorded anywhere else. They won the battle, and they were reunited with their children, and things got better from there on in. But they abandoned their children for 14 years, which was not so simple. It had a very dangerous effect on their children. So here, before we get to the battle, we're now going to learn about the territory where exactly they lived. Pasukas, Uvela ben Ozoz. Now we have a list of people. We have the person's name was, it's part of Reuben, the Bela ben Ozoz ben Shema ben Yoel. Now this Yoel is the same Yoel mentioned in Pasuk Dalet. Seemingly we're referring to that Yoel. Okay? And Shema is Shemaya. Okay, so we have Bnei Yoel, Shemaya Bnei. Yoel had a son called Shemaya, and Shemaya had a son called Gog. So here, Shemaya had another son whose name was Ozoz, and who had another son, and then had a grandson called Bela. So these are people. There is some overlap between Pasuk Ches and Pasuk Dalid, but they're not exactly the same. It's the same Yoel, and Yoel was the son of Shema. As it says here in Pasuk Dalid, Yoel had a son called Shema. The other ones are different. Okay, we have here Bela ben Ozoz ben Shema ben Yoel, who Yoshev ba'aroer. He lived in the city of Aroer, the Ad Nevo, Ubal Ma'on, from Nevo until Nevo and Baal Ma'on. Now there are a few things which have to be discussed. First of all, Aroer, we have our expert Balkore, and will tell us that God, who's the one that conquered Aroer? You have to remember all the cities there in Parshas Maaseh. It's in the Malbim. Look in the Radak. Look in the Radak, the exact Pasuk. Pasuk Ches in the Radak. Let me find Pasuk Ches. He mentions it. Yoshev Baroer. Yesh mefarshim beiz ba'aror b'mokim mem ki aror lo hoyle v'ruven kim l'vnei God kimo shana she'amar v'yivnu b'nei God es divon v'es ataros v'es aror. Right, it's an ace. The first one is an S, and the second one is an ace. Right, that's a tricky thing for Valkore. V'es aror. So aror, it says explicitly in Parashas Matos, God. Now, we're getting confused here because we're learning about Reuven. So what in the world is going on? Okay, there's a technical difficulty. It says here, there's Bela ben Ozoz ben Shema ben Yoel hu Yoshev ba'aroer. And we're in Aroer. The Ad Nevo Balmon's from Nevo and Balmon is north to south. Nevo seems to be the north, Ma'on is the south. What's going on here? This land belongs, Aroer, this place called Aroer belongs to God, not to Reuven. So the answer, that's what the Malm comes to explain, that when it says in the Matos, Aroer doesn't mean the entire Aroer. It means part of Aroer. But a portion of Aroer was also given to Reuven. Okay, if you look at the Radak, when you have the Mikros Kedos, look at the Radak, who Yeshev Aroer. He says, take the bays of the Be'aroer, Yeshev Arshim Beis Be'aroer, B'mokim Mem, Me'aroer. So the first interpretation is, not in Aroer, but from the boundary of Aroer, in another direction. Because Aroer indeed is not part of the property of Reuven, it's part of the property of God. Ki Aroer, lo hoyel v'nei Reuven, kim l'vnei God, k'mo sh'nemar, v'yivnu es b'nei God, es tibon, v'yes tos, v'yes Aroer. V'nochon hu chumo, motzim beis, v'mokim mem, and therefore there's a grammatical rule that the beis shall be interpreted as if it's a mem, nei Aroer. V'hanoisar b'boshon, he gives other examples. Okay, let's jump down one line. The Yesh Lefarish Ode, Be'aroer b'gvul aroer ki yir levad ha'isal of Negod. The city was the Negod. Shabanu also b'gvul ha'yal of Negod. Another interpretation is that Aroer is the name of a city, but it's also the name of a state, like New York City in New York State. So they only had the city. They only had God. Only had the city of Aroer, but the state, the region. The region was also the property of Bnei Reuven. Okay, now a Nevo and Balmon is the north to south. Okay, that's a region. And now it says something very, very strange. Pasuk Tes. The art scroll, Gidayom, he elaborates a lot on this. No one else elaborates on this except him. V'lamizrach. Where is the eastern border of Eretz Yisrael? If you learn the territory was meant to go only until the Yarden, the Jordan, okay, that would be the eastern border. But what happened? Reuven, God, Chatz Yishei Menashe, said we want to go take portion on the other side of the Yarden. So it became part of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, very good. How far did that part, that extension that was annexed to Eretz Yisrael, how far did the Kedusha go? So it says, you know how far it went? It went all the way to the Euphrates.
Nahapras.
Now, where is the Euphrates today?
In Syria.
It's in Syria. Iraq. Iran. It's really the border between... It's in Iran. It's in Iran, right? It goes all the way to Iran, close near the border of Iraq, but it's nice into Iran.
That's where the yeshivas were.
It's basically the border. Okay, I'm not good with geography, but it's basically the border between Iran and Iraq, somewhere in that vicinity. The border between the eastern edge of Iraq, going a little bit into Iran. No, it's in Iraq.
Not Iran, it is Iraq.
Iraq. Towards the eastern portion of Iraq. Right? Eastern portion of Iraq. Oh, right. Eastern portion of Iraq. So that means if you take this pasuk literally, if you're gonna take this pasuk literally as some do, that the entire Iraq is part of Eretz Yisrael. Shocking.
The western part.
What?
We don't need it.
You don't need it? I mean, there was an article a couple of months ago in I Magazine about, it was the cover article about the Taliban. Yes. And there are some indications that they're Jewish. They're Jewish.
The names of the families of Ben Joseph and Ephraim, all of those are...
Right.
They're living there, I mean, in some of them are in Iraq. Okay, so you want to say it's the Lost Tribes, but it could be, it's even from, forget about the Lost Tribes. These are Bnei Reuven. According to one interpretation, is that they spread, they had so much cattle, they conquered, we're going to see a little bit more, there were major wars that were taking place in the early years, during the time of Yeshua, and they pushed all the way to the east. And it's not so far-fetched, they conquered major chunks of land all the way, including the entire area of Iraq. And that's one interpretation. I'm sure many people are not very happy with this interpretation, to say that it goes that far. And so what then does it mean that it goes to the Euphrates? It doesn't mean mamish, where it flows. It means where it starts. You draw a line downwards in the north. Where does the Euphrates originate? Well, it goes up north and moves all the way over west. Okay, we need a map, but it goes west. The Euphrates moves all the way west. So when you come to the edge of Eretz Yisrael,
yeah.
What northwest?
The Euphrates is west. Yeah.
So when you go all the way up north, all the way, and you follow the Euphrates, you're going all the way to the west. Where it originates, where the Euphrates originate, that's where you take a line, a ruler, and you draw a line down. Doesn't mean mamash, you go and you chop the whole Iraq. It means, let's look at the Shoresh of this river. It's all the way over in the north.
Syria, that's what...
Right, Syria. So there is where you draw a line down, and that would exclude the entire chunk of Iraq. It's not part of Eretz Yisrael. When it means Nahar Paras, it doesn't mean the Nahar Paras that we're familiar with, where in Iraq, where it flows. It means Nahar Paras in its source. And in that area, cut it off downwards, to include on the west side is Eretz Yisrael, on the east side That is not our property. So that's what this is a pasuk test. V'la Mizrach. What are the boundaries in the Mizrach? Yoshav, they dwelt, Ruvain dwelt, ad levo midbara, to the coming of the desert. Okay, so that means either that it means a general term of the desert, desert land, or it means a name of a place. Lemin hanahor haparas, from the river of Paras. Again, two interpretations. Literally, literal Paras mamish, that's the boundary. Iraq is included, or it means where it starts. Ki mikneim ravu, because they had an enormous amount of cattle. The Eretz Gilad, in the land of Gilad. Gilad is the land on the east side of the Yarden. We really need a map to go through these things. I don't know the details, but Gilad is a land, a chunk of land on the east side of the Yarden. Now let's see over here. Pasuk Ches and Tes in the Mitzudos, and then Rashi Mitzudos Pasuk Ches Hu Yoshev Zaro Yoshu Bigvul Aroer. So he takes the word the Beis Be'aroer, the Mitzudos, like Rashi's first interpretation, and exchanges it for a Mem Mei Aroer, from the boundary of Aroer, not to compete with the Shevet of God. V'yad Nevo Hu Haruchoyv Mitzafon Darv. Nevo is the width of the land from the width from the north. Nevo is on the north, it seems, and Nevo, and what was the other one? Nevo and Baal Ma'on is the south. Ulam Mizrach Yashav Pasik Tes in the Mitzudos Klape HaMizrach Yashu and Makam Sheboim Bol LeMidbar. We enter the desert. Lemen HaNahar Paras V'Hala, from the region of the Nahar Paras and further. Afki Nahar Paras He Gvul Eretz Yisrael LeMizrach. Even though it's the eastern boundary, Nisrachaku LeHala. So according to the Mitzudos, he's learning the Pshat and the Pasik even different than I told you. Even though that's the boundary, it's not exactly clear what part of Nahar Paras he's referring to. They went even further. So you want to go take everything combined, it means they went past Iraq. They went into Iran, which is, it's already too much already. So Nisrachaku Lahala even further. Ki Nisrabu Mikneh Milosheves Beretz Gilad. It was too much. The place was too small. So let's assume that we're referring to the beginning, the origins of Nahar Paras in the north. So that's really where the boundary of Eretz Yisrael is. But they expanded, they overflowed, they spilled out past that eastward because there was not enough space. Let's look at Rashi Pasuk Ches and Tes. Now Rashi over here is telling us there's something called Nevo and Ma'on. The problem is, if you take out a modern map of Eretz Yisrael, there's no such place on the east side of the Yarden called Nevo and Baal Ma'on. Why? Because these names were changed. The reason why they were changed is because these are names of Avodah Zarah. And when the Jewish people conquered the land, anything which had the name of an Avodah Zarah was changed. So we're referring to their original name for record keeping. Rashi, Shabiyamim Kadmoinim Koidim Shabo Lidei Yisrael, before it was conquered, Nikru'u Nevo Ubalmon, these two locations on the east side of the Yarden, one in the north, one in the south, were called by the names Nevo Balmon, Al Shem Toy Avoisam, on the name of their idols, their Avodah Zarah. That was the custom of non-Jews ad hayom, hahu, during that time, likros toyavosem shem iroy sehem, to call their cities by the name of their gods. Aval kishaboli de Yisrael, when the Jewish people conquered the land, hisabu shemosam, they changed their names. Kidachsiv, this is a Ferish Pasuk. Pasuk was Vyas Nevo, Vyas Baal Ma'on. It's a Pasuk, Mamash Pasuk in Bamidbar, in Maaseh. Vyas Nevo, Vyas Baal Ma'on, Musabos Shem. What does that mean? Okay, we learned it in the Parulain not so long ago. Nevo Ma'on, Musabos Shem. Musabos means to change, Siba, to cause it to change. These are their original names, but today there is no record of these names because they have been changed due to the fact that these are not nice names. Tiloimar Yisrael Hisebu Shemoisam. Then the pasuk includes via Sivma. Sivma was not changed. On a modern map, you will find, supposedly, whatever we've run to time.
In other words, it's they did the when they
reconquered.
They named it like they used to call it.
The real names.
The next
pasuk. Okay. Via Sivma. Sivma, the name is not Musabo Shem. Why not? Lefi Shaloi Nikro Al Shem Toyavoseha. It was never called by the name of an idol. Therefore, there was no need to change the name. Lo Yesebu Shema. They did not change name. Uv Megillah Mefarish Kinevov Al Mo No Shem Avoydas Chacham Heim. And to prove the point, in Masech Megillah, you will find that these two are names of idols, and therefore these are names of cities. One city appears to be in the north of the east side of the Arden, the other was in the south, and that was the boundary where Reuven dwelt at this point in time. Okay, so this is, I think I saw another interpretation, that a mountain, this is a very interesting idea, that a mountain has really four sides, four slopes. Okay, it's 360 degrees, but if you want to break it up, a massive mountain, there are slopes. There's a slope on the north, the south, the east, the west. Because the problem is, Nevo and Baal Ma'on appear to be one location, one mountain, the name of the same mountain. However, they would call each slope of the mountain by a different name. So if you have this massive mountain, the north slope of the mountain was Nevo, and the south slope of the mountain was Baal Ma'on. What's the east and the west? We don't know. It doesn't tell us what the names of those sides were, but according to one interpretation, it's referring to a location. Go 100 miles here, that's Nevo. 100 miles back is Baal Ma'on. Different locations. What?
Yeah,
they do that today.
The Alps on certain mountains that end up in different countries.
Yeah.
So some of the
slopes
slope down into Switzerland and in Italy.
Yes.
And they
name the slope. So that's how, right, that's how
North
someone
face,
learned.
South face, you know, they have names.
You have the French Alps, the Swiss Alps.
No, but they have the names also.
Because that's another.
Which side of the mountain you come down?
It's another interpretation of what it means. Okay, let's go further. Can I pasuk yud?
Wasn't Shimon in
that's Shimon, not the Shimon, where are they now?
Shimon went to Ma'onim.
I don't know. Shimon was in the Shevet of Yehuda. Shimon did not settle on the east side of the island. It could be a different place that had the same name.
Where was Ma'on? The Ma'onim. Ma'onim was not
Bethlehem. It has to be a new place. It has to then be different, another place with the same name. Baal Ma'on. It's a difference.
The same reason, because it was good for their cattle.
Okay. And, it could be true, but it has to be a different location, because Shimon did not settle on, at least simply, or you say that they ran away, maybe you're right, because afterward we learned that they were expelled from the land, so they went to that place called Ma'onim, so maybe they settled with Reuven. I don't know, I hear what you're saying, I don't know the details. They had to move out of the land of Yehuda because they were expelled. Where did they go? Maybe you're right, maybe they did, they crossed over the Yarden and they went east to the same place where Reuven was living, a different section. It could be, you're right.
Maybe Reuven never bothered these people.
It was enough for everyone to go around. It could be.
I think Mem Aleph in the previous
Perek Dalet Pasuk Nim Aleph. Okay, we Pasuk Nim Aleph. Vayavo Eile Haksuv B'Shem Asminei Yichizkiyo Bel Yehuda Vayak. That's much later on, though. That's at a much later point in time. Okay, so over here we're dealing with the first settlement, time of Yehoshua. Here he's telling us what Yehuda did, the Shimon did, the time of Yichizkiyo Bel Yehuda Vayak Vesoholeim Vyes Hameoinim. Okay, maybe you're right. Maybe it means that the people of Shimon, they crossed the eastern side of the Arden and they conquered. But again, that has to be much, much later on. They're dealing with it like 600 years later. Because they're told in the book of Beis HaMikdash, it was 480 years, 440 years, and now it was another, Chizkiyo was another 200 years into the Bayis Sheni, so we're dealing over here with a very long period of time from the time that Shimon, Reuven, dwelt in Ma'on, and when Shimon was expelled from the land of Yehuda and went somewhere else. Now, we come over here to something that's very important. We're running out of time. We'll just touch upon this at least for right now. Well, let's get to one more pasuk, okay? One more pasuk, pasuk Yud. Uvimei Shaul. During the days of Shaul. Who is Shaul? Well, that was the first king, right? Seemingly, from Sheh ben Yamin. Asu milchama im ha-hag-ri-im. And this itself is a fascinating nation. Ha-hag-ri-im is Hagar. The Sharish of Hey Gimel Reish Hagar. Her children, her descendants, the Arabs, they were called ha-hag-ri-im after their mother. A whole nation was named after their mother. And the Aleph is just for to refer to them. Just something that's added to the Hagar in order to give it more oomph. Ha-ha-gri-im, va-yiblu bi-yadam, and the children of Reuven waged a major war against the descendants of Yishmael, and they were successful, and the children of Hagar fell, va-yeshu bi-oholehem, and the children of Reuven lived in their tents, the tents of the Arabs, al kol pnei mizrach la Gilad, on the entire eastern side of Gilad. In other words, they conquered part of Iraq, you can't say not. They really went all the way, Jordan for sure. Jordan was part of the East Bank, that's the Dever Pasha, but you keep on going weiter, keep on going past Jordan, you're going into Iraq. So there's no question they conquered part of Iraq. At this, they lived there, they didn't have the status of Eretz Yisrael, it's not clear, but they conquered that part of Mizrach LaGilad. Now, what does this mean during the time of Shaul? So we're going to learn. Let's see Mesudas and Rashi. We're going to do this part and we'll stop. Let's see Mesudas and Rashi. Yod Be'oholehem Shel Hahagriim. The tents they lived. They didn't have to build new buildings. They just occupied their tents. Al Pnei Al Kol Aver Hamizrachi Mul HaGilad, on the eastern side of Gilad, opposite Gilad. Let's take a pasuk Yud. Pasuk Yud Im Hahagriim Heim Hayishneelim. Yeah. Why are they called the Yishmaelim? Al Shem Imam Karba Hagriim Bnei Hogar Hayu. Vayeshu Be'aholayim Shekin Minig Arvoyim Leishay Be'aholim Nomads. They lived in Arvim, nomads. They lived in tents. Okay, so that's it. Now, here is the Medrash. The Medrash, a beautiful Medrash. The Medrash says, this I've seen this in the art school, in the back of the art school, Eisenstein, I think his name is, in the back of the art school, where they have all of the Machshav and the Drush. He really goes to town on this pasuk. It's based on the Medrash. I'll read you the Medrash right now. British Rabbah, Amar Rabbi Yeshua Bar Nechemya, Bimei Shol Ze Yehoshua. When it says Shaul, this is not the real Shaul. This is Yehoshua. V'lamo hu kare oso Shaul. Why is he called Shaul? Shehoisa ha-malchus she'ula biyadai. The Malchus was borrowed in his hand. A whole new world. This is a topic. This is a whole book now. A whole chapter, whatever you want to call it, of Drusha Machshava, a topic that you can make a drusha, develop however you want. Yehoshua in this pasuk is called by the name of Shaul because his malchus was borrowed from Shaul. What does that mean? Now, to prove this, really we have to learn the next pasukim, which we're not going to do today. We'll do that tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem, to prove how we know that this cannot possibly refer to Shaul. Why not? Who's forcing your hand to tell me that when it says Shaul, it means Yehoshua? It means Yehoshua. Maybe it means Shaul, which would take us how many years later? It would take us a few hundred years ahead.
Did Shaul go to war with Yishmael?
What? Maybe he did. We don't. He not Shaul. Reuven. Shaul was living on the west side during the time. No, Reuven's not a Shevet. Reuven is not a. Shaul comes from Shevet Binyamin. During the lifetime, during the reign of Shaul Hamelech, Shaul was busy establishing his malchus on the west side of the Yarden. There were other things happening in Klal Yisrael, right? It's a busy, Klal Yisrael is very busy. You go online, you know, there are a lot of things going on all over the world. No one has a monopoly on the news, on what's going on. So Shaul was doing his thing. And Reuven, they were living on the East Bank. There were things happening, so they went to war and they conquered some territory. Big deal. Who forced us to say that Shaul is Yehoshua? That we're going to learn tomorrow why. But for right now, we have the Chazal that tell us that this is not Shaul, this is Yehoshua. But yet, the fact that the pasuk calls Yehoshua by the name of Shaul indicates there is some relationship. Fascinating. What is the relationship? Next question, another issue. Yehoshua is a melech. He's not a melech. The first melech was Shaul. He was the first one that was anointed. Soim tas melech melech. There were no kings. Yehoshua was a manhig. And then there was a tkufa of, what was Moshe? Moshe, Vahi b'shir melech. Okay, so Moshe was also a melech, but Moshe wasn't a melech with anointed of soim tas melech melech, as Moshe instructed Klal Yisrael, the day will come you have a melech. Yehoshua followed in Moshe's way. He wasn't a real melech. So what's going on here? So the answer is, the pasuk here is teaching us that yes, Shaul was a melech, but a borrowed melech, meaning limitations. One of the rules of Malchus is a melech, after he dies, it goes on to his children. He is moirish. He bequeaths the power, the Malchus, to his children. Yehoshua did not have that right. He was a melech. He had power.
What? He had no sons.
So even if he had a son, it wouldn't have made a difference.
Well, same thing with Moshe.
Moshe also did not bequeath his power to his children. That's right, exactly. So okay, the details I do not know. You have to study the Rambam, Hilchos Melachim. What are the rules of a king? A king has special Shulchan Aruch. A king can do things that the average person cannot do in Halacha. They're psukim. It's a Shulchan Aruch. It's a complicated thing to be a king. You have a different Shulchan Aruch. Yoshua had some of those powers, but was missing some of those powers. It's a new Shulchan Aruch. There's a Shulchan Aruch for the average person, a Shulchan Aruch for a real king, and there's a Shulchan Aruch for someone that's in between, a semi-king. That was Yehoshua. He was a semi-king, and that's why he's called Shaul, to play on the words. He was his king, he was borrowed from the first real king, because he had power as king, but not full power. When you borrow something, you have rights, but you don't have ownership. And the main limitation was the children did not inherit his mouth. That's one approach. Another approach, is a very beautiful approach, is What is the role of the king? The role of the king, one of the primary roles of the king, is to wipe out Amalek. And that was given to Shaul. That was his main role. And he failed. Shaul was told, the time has now come. He was given that role, and he went to war. And he almost succeeded. His failure was he left over the animals, and he left over Agag. And because he failed, that's one of the reasons why he lost his malchus. He failed in that respect. Question is, why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu wipe out Amalek? Why didn't Yoshua say Hilochim? That's in the landing of Parashas Peshalach. We learned this on Purim. Say Hilochim ba'Amalek, and the Chasher Yodim Moshe Yodai the Gavar Yisrael. The Chasher, when Moshe put his hands down, and the Gavar Amalek. So why didn't? Why wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu able? Why wasn't Yoshua able to conquer Amalek? So the answer is because the pasuk makes it very clear: "V'hoya b'honiach Hashem lokecha mikol oyvecha misaviv." The mitzvah of mechias Amalek first begins after you eradicate, you settle in the land, and you eradicate all of Canaan. Okay, the reasons are not for now. I don't know the reasons anyway, but the time to wipe out Amalek is only after you completely succeed in conquering Eretz Yisrael and obliterating Canaan. Once Canaan is out of the picture, then you go out to the world and knock out Amalek. Amalek does not live in Eretz Yisrael. Amalek lives among the Umos HaOlam. They're not living. Who lives in Eretz Yisrael? Canaan. Klal Yisrael was given the mission to conquer Eretz Yisrael and wipe out the nation of Canaan. When Canaan has been eradicated, then you go proceed to wipe out Amalek. V'hoya b'honiach Hashem Elokecha mikol oyvecha misaviv. Now you rise up and timcha zecher Amalek. Who had the role to wipe out Canaan? Yehoshua. Yehoshua laid the foundation for Shaul to proceed in wiping out Amalek. So that's why we connect Yehoshua to Shaul. Yehoshua was a melech, so to some degree, who's laying the groundwork, the foundation for to now proceed for Shaul Timche Ezecher Amalek. And that's why we connect Yehoshua to Shaul. It's a beautiful idea. You don't have this idea often. This concept, they're a team. Yehoshua, we learned last week, Shevet Yehuda and Shimon are a team. Shimon is going to be rehabilitated by Yehuda. We have a new concept today. We have Yehoshua and Shaul, they're a team. Yehoshua's role is to lay the foundation framework to prepare that Shaul now can come and wipe out Amalek. And that's why we connect the two together here in this Pasuk test by calling one by the name of the other. Okay, so we'll stop here. Pick this up tomorrow morning.